Mrajuhtuden.
Mrajuhtuden.
Sober as sober. Sober. Sober as
welcome to the Anonymous Eskimo Project, a program devoted to bringing hope to those struggling with mental health issues and addiction. Through candid conversations with guests about mental health issues, addiction, and sobriety, we can let those who are struggling know that they are not alone. I am your host, Ralph Sara. On this show, I have Leonora Barton. Leonora is Tlingit from Sitka and Wrangell, Alaska. She recently graduated college with a business administration and human resources management degree. Leonora has been sober for just over 2 years. And on this show, Leonora courageously shares her story for those that are still struggling. So guys, please help me welcome Leonora Barton. Hi, Leonora. How are you?
I'm good, Ralph. How are you?
I'm good. Just so everybody can get to know you, are you able to go ahead and introduce yourself?
Oh, sure. My name is Leonora Barton. I grew up in Southeast Alaska, between Sitka and Wrangell. I spent my summers in Wrangell and my school years in Sitka. I moved up into Anchorage in 1999, and yeah, I have two children. My youngest is 18 today. It's great.
Wow. Are you Tlingit or?
I am. I'm Tlingit. My dad was full-blooded Nishka from Canada, from British Columbia, a little village called King Colith, but he was raised in Prince Rupert. My mother was Tlingit, Tsimshian, and Norwegian.
Oh, cool.
So I've got a whole mixture.
That's so awesome. I'm part Norwegian, too, like a
oh,
quarter.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
Yeah. We could be related.
Hey. Can you tell everybody what things looked like before your recovery?
Absolutely. Okay, so I was born into addiction. Like, rumors have it that my mom was drinking throughout my pregnancy, that I was born addicted to alcohol, and it was really hard for me to learn. Like, I always think I'm a decade behind my peers. It's taken me a lot longer to learn than everybody else. And I was a year behind in school. I was held back in kindergarten because I didn't talk. Like, that was the reasoning. They're like, Leonora doesn't speak. She can't go on to first grade because she's not able to verbally communicate with us. So until she can verbally communicate, she's going to have another year of kindergarten. So I finally started speaking, but I always felt like I didn't belong. Like, I was a very depressed child, and I started self-medicating. I didn't realize that's what I was doing. And this is tough. I was 8 years old, and I started huffing glue. We're making this Mother's Day project, and we did a new page every month. And so in May, the book would be completed and we can give it to our mothers. And I realized one day that we used rubber cement. This was in the 1980s, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so we were using the glue unsupervised, you know, and I would make little balls out of it, and I would take the container and just smell it because it smelled funny and made my head feel weird. And then I would pass out. And I'd wake up and go home, and I started stealing that glue from class, and I would bring it home. And so I'd go sit in my little room after school, and I would huff this glue until I would pass out. And I did that for 6 years, until I was 14, when I discovered weed and alcohol. And I did that I kind of, you know, I never stopped drinking alcohol. I quit smoking weed after my first stint in rehab. My parents sent me to Fairbanks to Graff. It was called Graff Rehner Hanji or something. I don't know. But I came home and I was able to not smoke weed for 9 months, but and or drink. But I went right back to drinking like 9 months, and I just went gung ho. I had gastritis by the time I was 18, and I still have it. And that's really sad. Like, I was puking up blood and scaring the bejesus out of my mother. And at this time, my mother sobered up. I think my mom sobered up when I was like 14, 15. Whenever I started drinking is when my mom sobered up. And my mom's fifth child. I'm her youngest. She was 32 when she had me. And I was pretty much raised by my older siblings. My dad worked a lot. My stepdad worked a lot. And, you know, it was just, I was raised in an alcoholic home, but by the time I decided I wanted to drink and party is when my mom sobered up. It's kind of a sad, it's really sad, but at least I got a sober mom. Like, my older siblings are 7, 10, and 11 years older than me. Mm-hmm. They didn't get a sober mom. Like, I have a sister that's a year older than me. She also got a sober mom through the end of our teenagers. But by that time, it was too late for me. Like, I was already pissed off at my mom. But I also didn't know her story. My mom has a really strong story, and people tell me all the time. I never got a chance to hear her story, but I did grow up in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. It's like, it's not something that she didn't try to do. She tried to sober up. She took me to meetings with her, and I sat on the floor in these AA meetings where people are smoking their cigarettes. Like, I knew the deal. I knew all the verbiage. I knew all of the, you know, I knew the serenity prayer and the third step prayer and all of that stuff. Like, those were just something. It was just like going to church. Like, I knew all the Bible verses. I also knew all of the AA slogans, right?
Mm-hmm.
So my feet were trained. When I decided that it was time to sober up myself, my feet were trained. I knew where to go. I knew what to do because my mom did it. And my mom took me with her. Always. And people would always say, you know, your mom is such a good person. I love your mom. And that made me mad. And I remember my mom introducing her as a grateful recovering alcoholic. And the first time I heard it, I remember, this is super sad. This is, but it's true. This is my truth. The first time I heard it, that's when I decided I was going to show my mom what, and I was going to become worse than her. And I don't think I've ever said this to anybody before, honestly. That's when I decided I was going to be a career alcoholic and drug addict. I was going to take it one step further than my mom, because my mom was an alcoholic. She didn't do drugs. And I did. I was successful at that. That was my first goal that I ever achieved, was being an alcoholic and drug addict, because I wanted to be worse than my mom and show her why she was grateful. But my mom passed when I was 21 years old, before I sobered up. And that's really sad. But I was able to forgive her. Like, my sponsor had me write out a letter many years ago to my mom and go to the place that reminded me of her the most. And we'd only lived in Anchorage a year when she passed. So I went to where her church was. She moved up here to run the Salvation Army Outpost. So I went to that church and I got a metal bowl or something. And I had written out my amends in a letter. It was like 3 or 4 pages. And I was angry. Like, I remember it being a very angry letter at the beginning. And by the end of it, I was like sobbing, crying, because I'm having to read this aloud like I was reading to my mom.
Mm-hmm.
And I burn it up, and I just felt better. Like, I was able to apologize to my mom, and then I've tried to make living amends to her for the rest of that. But I had kids at this time, and I didn't want my kids to end up like I did. I never wanted them to have that unspoken, I don't even know what you call it. Like, I don't know. I didn't want them to feel as I did towards my mother. That eventually happened. My kids went to this, like I said, I was sober for a year and a half. and I fell off the wagon. And within 3 days of that, my kids were in state's custody. It took me 3 days. And they were 6 and 8 at the time. And it was so hard. My stepdad had just moved to Colorado, so he couldn't take them. And their dad wasn't answering the phone, because why would he answer my crazy drunk calls, right? And I tried to blame this all on them. Like, this is your fault. The kids are in state's custody because you didn't answer the phone. The kids are in state's custody because you moved to Colorado, you know. Mm-hmm. That's not true. That's not true. My kids got put in state's custody because I was in neglect for mother, because I decided to drink with my kids home alone. I decided to go to the next door's neighbors and beat up his girlfriend. Those were the things I did. The cops were called to my house because I went there and my kids were home alone and I was drunk. And that was really hard for me to do, to accept. It took me a long time to learn that. Like, I got kicked out of treatment because I would not say that. Because I refused to admit what I did, to not put the blame on somebody else. But that's the thing. That's what I got to do. I didn't have to. I got to make this realization that I was a neglect from mother, I was an alcoholic, I was a drug addict, and I chose alcohol and drugs over my own children. And it's not as hard to say now. Like, that is something I did, that is something I have owned up to. My kids ended up being in state's custody for, you know, it's supposed to be 2 years, but they kept extending my case because their dad was working at getting them. Their dad got them back, but it took them a long time to get the case closed because they were trying to get me involved. And they wanted family reunification, but they wanted family reunification with the mother, but I just could not get myself clean. I'd get a couple of 1 month coins and go back out. Like, religiously, I was just constantly relapsing. And so they changed the family plan. They changed the reunification to the father, which, bless his heart, he was able to do it. And it took 2.5 years for them to close the case. And I remember when they closed the case, I celebrated by going out and getting loaded. Which is sad, but it's what I did. And it took a couple of more years. I showed up to my daughter's 13th birthday after sleeping for 2 days, thinking that was fine, that was all that I needed. And I was still really tweaky, like really tweaky, really shaky. It was paper thin. And I forgot her gift. I got her this really nice gift, and I painted her a picture, and I got some party favors for her friends. And I was not supposed to be there. I showed up unannounced. I manipulated her little friend into telling me where the party was, what time the dad was going to be back, because they dropped him off at a swimming pool. And I showed up, and my daughter looked at me. I remember being a 13-year-old girl with an alcoholic mother. I remember how that felt, and I remember how I would look at her. I always loved my mom, but until that moment, I didn't realize how I was making my children feel. Because my daughter, when she was 13, looked a lot like I did at 13. And I looked at my daughter, and it was like looking in a mirror, and I could feel her pain. I could feel her shame. Like, my mom just showed up to my party loaded. Even though I'd slept, I still had all of that in my system, you know? Mm-hmm. And it was just heartbreaking. She gave me a hug. You know, I asked her, I'm like, can I have a hug? And she just kind of said, yeah, I guess. And I stayed for 5 minutes. For 5 minutes after not seeing my daughter for like a year. And I left. And I went back to my little room that I was staying in, that my sister had her friend paying for this room. And I think I had like... it was being paid for each week by my sister's friends. Like, nobody would see me by this time. Like, I had burnt every bridge that I had, and I would have stuff dropped off to my door, and I was all by myself, and I would get high, and I would clean this little room that didn't need to be cleaned anymore. And that night, I got down on my hands and knees, and it's like I repented. And I didn't know who I was praying to, because I didn't know if I believed in God or what I believed in at this time. Like, I was angry. Like, I told everybody I was agnostic, but I found myself in this motel room on the floor on my hands and knees praying to God to help me get through this, because I did not want my little girl to feel the way I did, but she did, because from what I saw, she had to have been feeling the same way I did when I was 13. Mm-hmm. Like, how could I? That is what I never wanted. I wanted better for my children than I wanted for myself. And then I realized that I couldn't sober up for my children. I had to sober up for myself. That's what I was feeling. That's the pain I was feeling.
Mm-hmm.
And it took my little girl, it took the pain in my little girl's face to get me to realize that I was still a little girl inside. And the person that I needed to forgive was not my mother. The person that I needed to forgive was myself. And how do you forgive yourself for putting your children through that, for putting your mother through that, for putting your fathers through that, for your siblings, for anybody that cared about you? You got to get down on, you got to work on yourself.
Yeah.
So it took me 3 more weeks. Like, I detoxed myself in that hotel room, and it was really scary. Like, it was so scary. I didn't know if I was going to make it at some points. I should have been hospitalized. It should have been a medical detox, but I did it myself. And I don't know how, but by the grace of God, I managed to survive that hotel detox. And I went and manipulated my cousin's boyfriend into letting me stay at their house, because she was mad at me and she didn't want anything to do with me. And I manipulated him, and I got back into their house. And I remember the last time I used a shot. I used intravenous drugs. That was my drug of choice. And was November 5th, 2015. And at one point, I was living on a bench, like outside in the cold, sleeping on the cold, because I couldn't get anybody to answer my phone. And actually, I didn't have a phone. I had a tablet, and I downloaded some kind of calling app,
mm-hmm.
and I would have to be in Wi-Fi to use it.
Yeah.
And sometimes I couldn't get anybody to answer, so I would just find a bench and sleep. And it's so sad. It was so cold. And I finally sobered up, and I would walk. I couldn't get anybody to even pick me up for a meeting. Like, nobody believed me. Nobody believed Leonora was willing to sober up. Nobody believed that I really wanted to go to a meeting. They just wanted to con them out of a ride or money or something, you know? So I started walking from my cousin's house to the dry dock, and it would take a really long time because she didn't live anywhere near it, and it was cold in November. And I did it every day, twice a day, to and from the dry dock.
Mm-hmm.
And I ran into my sponsor at one of the meetings. She was speaking on a Friday night, and I'd been sober for a couple of days, and I asked her to be my sponsor. Actually, you know what happened? As soon as she finished speaking, she saw me sitting in the back by the bathroom, you know, up against the wall there.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember her making eye contact with me while she was up there at the podium. And as soon as she was done, you know, everybody did their clapping. I remember her darting across the room. You know, she's supposed to wait for people to say thank you or whatever. I remember her walking straight to me. This is my memory. It's a little foggy. It might not actually be what happened, but it's what I remember happening. And she looked at me, and she gave me a hug, and she put her hands on my shoulders, and she looked at me. And then she did it like 3 or 4 times. And then finally she looked at me, and she said, "Leonora, you're alive. I thought you were dead."
Oh.
And I said, "No, I'm alive." And said, what you just said, I was like, that reminds me of me, like everything you just said. And I've known this lady. I met her originally in 2008. We had the same sponsor. for many years, and then her sponsor actually fired me. I didn't know you could do
what?
That. yeah, like I was bad. I was so bad I couldn't keep sponsors. Like it was that bad. And I said, no, I'm alive. And then, would you be my sponsor? And she said, I got one question for you, Leonora. Are you willing to go to any lengths? And I said, yes, I am willing to go to any lengths. And so we went into the back room and we got down on our hands and knees. And we said, we did 1, 2, and 3. And we said the third steps were prayer. And I went to any lengths. I went to a meeting every day. I walked everywhere. I missed a whole lot of buses. I did a couch commitment. And I moved into New Life Development, which was not easy. Was not easy for me to do, because to move into New Life, you had to have an open case, which luckily I did. I had a warrant out for my arrest, and I got it quashed. I didn't even have an ID. But the person that brought me to the courtroom used to work at the court, and she knew the clerk of the court or whatever, and she was like, all right, well, I'm going to take her word that you are who you are. You can show up to court tomorrow.
Wow.
I'm like, all right. Because I didn't have an ID, man. I got that warrant quashed, and I went to New Life, and I got lost trying to find New Life. But I found it, and I sat there, and my interview with the director took like something like 2 hours. It was a really long interview, and he did not want to let me move in. He did not. I remember him telling me that the week prior, maybe 2 weeks prior, they had just pulled somebody that was addicted to drugs like I was off the bathroom floor in a body bag.
Oh.
And I looked at him and I said, that's not going to be me, man. Like, I promise you, I'm done. That is not going to be me. And he said, okay, if I let you move in here in 5 years, I want you to come back and tell me how you did it, and all the hoops you jumped through and everything you did to make it. I want you to tell me your story in 5 years. And I said, okay. So he let me move in that following Sunday. And so I was able to extend that couch commitment. And I moved in there. And, you know, that's just so sad. I read in the news that right before I moved in there, another homeless person had died sleeping on a bench out in the cold. Mm. And I'm like, every year November comes around and I think about that. Like, that could have been me. Like, yeah. If he didn't let me move in there, if my friend didn't let me do a couch commitment at her house and believe in me, finally, somebody finally believe in me, that would have been my story. You know, my children would have been left without a mom. And it's not that way anymore. Like, my children were 10 and 13 when I sobered up, and my son's 18th birthday is today. And I wouldn't be able to be there today if it wasn't for New Life Development letting me move into there and sober up and get a job. And, you know, I got my first job after cleaning up as a hostess and a bustess, a hostess and a busser at a restaurant.
Oh,
and now,
yeah.
And I've moved up. Like, I'm a manager in a restaurant now. You know, mm-hmm. I was literally cleaning the bathroom stalls and cleaning up the yard or the parking lots and bussing up people's tables and mopping underneath them to being in charge of the restaurant. You know, the front of the house.
Yeah.
I've come a long way. But it took a lot. Like, I worked the steps, all of them, and I went to the meetings, and I was honest with myself, and I made amends to people that I never thought I'd make amends to. And I went through a treatment center, and I finished it this time. I did MRT, and MRT, I tell you what, MRT is grueling.
What's that?
It is so moral recognition therapy. I went to Aquila. I went to the Aquila treatment center, the outpatient, intensive outpatient treatment. And you got to complete all these steps in this book. And you got to be honest and truthful. And you are judged by your peers. if your peers say you're lying or they don't believe what you're saying, you need to redo the step and come back and next week and do it. But you might not always get to do it the next week. You might have to wait a little bit because everybody has to go. And it's so hard. And you got to be truthful. And you got to dig into yourself and your soul and where you think you need improvement, where you went wrong, when this started. You talk about your childhood. Basically, everything that I've just told you mm-hmm. is stuff that I have learned in MRT. Oh. Saying that I am the one that put my children in foster care because I chose drug and alcohol over them. I learned that in MRT. I learned to tell the truth. And it was hard. MRT was so hard, but it was so worth it. I would definitely recommend that program. They do that program in jails and institutions. Like it helps you get rid of your criminal thinking.
Oh.
Like it is a good program. It's a tough program. And a lot of people have completed it, and I know why. Because it's definitely needed. It was definitely needed for me. That with the 12 steps in my program that I use, it was needed.
What would you say to somebody who is, you know, currently struggling?
Don't give up. Find a sponsor. Be truthful to yourself. Forgive yourself. Love yourself and trust others. It's really hard to do. Like, when you're out there and you're actively using, who can you trust? You can't trust anybody. You can't even trust yourself. But when you're in the program, then people that are in the program genuinely, truly want to be sober and clean and living in recovery and be in right living. So just dive right in, follow suggestion, and don't give up on yourself.
Never give up. Never give up.
Nope.
Well, Leonora, I really want to thank you so much. Your story was so powerful. I didn't say much because I was listening to you and just like, wow, you know? And it's so amazing that you just graduated college, and you are a true success story. And I want to thank you from the bottom of my heart for coming on here and having the courage to share your story. So thank you.
You're welcome, Ralph. Thank you so much for having me on your show. I appreciate it. It's been a pleasure. And I hope out there I can at least reach one person with my story.
Well, that's all for today's show. I hope you, the listeners, found some inspiration, strength, and hope. Listen next week when I have another strong, courageous person on who's walking with us on this healing journey. This program is available as a podcast. You can hear this and many more episodes wherever you listen to podcasts or at anonymouseskimo.com. Join in the Anonymous Eskimo Project, Saturdays at 3 p.m., Sundays at 8 p.m. on KSKO, serving the western interior of Alaska for more than 4 decades. I'm your host, Ralph Sara. Biura!
Native Voice 1, the Native American Radio Network.